brings back a lot of memories for me. It's a lot hotter here, but I'll tell you there are a lot of similarities.
The Presidential Oil Spill Commission begins its work in New Orleans. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 15th of July. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an ambitious plan at UAF to capture a high-resolution map of the planet Venus.
We will have a better data set for Venus than we have for the Earth when we get done.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. And by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska has won a court restraining order against Anchorage's camping ordinance. The ordinance was aimed at the homeless who were camping in city parks and allowed police to seize and destroy the possessions of the homeless campers after issuing a five-day notice. State Superior Court Judge Mark Ridner ordered a 10-day restraining order against the city's ordinance based on issues of constitutionality raised by the ACLU. Jeffrey Mittman is executive director for ACLU in Alaska.
We've raised serious and substantial issues as to whether or not it's constitutional. We've also represented the court appropriately that by destroying individuals' property, they're subject to harm that cannot be repaired. And based on that, it's appropriate to order a temporary restraining order. Really stopping this process for 10 days would not harm the city in any way.
Mittman says the ordinance has serious flaws which violate property rights which are protected by both the federal and state constitutions, arguing that the ordinance does not notify campers of the specific violations they must defend against and that it does not determine whether or not the property of the homeless is abandoned.
Well, if you want to throw property out, it has to be clearly abandoned. That's a constitutional protection we all get. And so based on that, we've told the city that this 1 day or 3 day or 5 days isn't really an indication of an intention to abandon. So the ACLU has never said it's got to be X, Y, or Z days. What we have said is the ordinance as drafted is unconstitutional. Here are the issues.
Mittman says the property needs to be impounded and saved so that homeless campers can retrieve it. The temporary restraining order does not indicate that the court has made a final decision on the constitutionality of the ordinance, however. Mittman says the ACLU and city attorneys will meet with the judge again on Monday to work out a compromise. Municipality of Anchorage attorney Dennis Wheeler says the city ordinance notifies illegal campers that they need to remove their belongings or file an appeal before a hearing officer. Wheeler says the appeal process gives the illegal camper time and help in removing property.
We did our very best to look at ordinances and court decisions from all over the country to come up with something that address that very issue. And while we feel that our five-day notice period and appeal process is legally sufficient, I can understand that as advocates for their client's position, they take a contrary view.
Wheeler says the option of holding homeless property is not feasible under the city's current budget situation. Mittman says the temporary restraining order opens the way for the ACLU to seek a permanent restraining order against the ordinance. The Presidential Commission on the BP oil spill began work this week in New Orleans. The commission took testimony at their first hearing there Monday and Tuesday. University of Alaska Anchorage Chancellor Fran Ulmer is one of the commissioners. She says she's been traveling southeast of New Orleans and has spoken with a lot of people directly affected by the spill.
There are literally thousands of oil spill response workers dotted along the coast, focused out of these main community centers, listening to them talk about the work that they're doing, and also listening to people who have spent their lives in fishing, in the seafood processing industry, in the tourism and restaurant business. It brings back a lot of memories for me of times right after the Exxon Valdez when I visited Cordova and Valdez and Kodiak and listen to people express their fear, their anger, their worry about the future. There are a lot of similarities. It's a lot hotter here, but I'll tell you there are a lot of similarities.
How did the first hearing go on Monday?
We had quite a variety of input from one gentleman who wanted to sing his testimony and accompanied himself on a guitar to people who were literally in tears talking about how not only they have spent their whole life here in the Gulf, but their third, fourth, fifth generation Louisiana families who are very fearful about how this will impact their lives. We also heard a lot from people in the oil and gas industry who are very concerned about the moratorium and how the moratorium imposes yet another economic challenge for them that is very troubling about the extent to which they will recover in a timely fashion on both levels, both the environmental and the economic. So we heard lots of different opinions, a lot of testimony about the current effects, but also a lot of concerns about the long-term effects of the spill.
And Commissioner Omer, how do you think you'll be able to apply the lessons from Alaska to your work on the commission? You talked earlier about memories from the spill here in Alaska. How will that inform and help your work down there?
You know, there's a workbook, kind of a how-to guide that was prepared in Alaska, how to handle the stress, how to handle the emotional problems that come from experiencing a trauma like this. I've connected some of the folks in Alaska with the mental health providers who testified on Tuesday about their concerns that they are seeing people who are so distraught, they're depressed, they're really struggling. This workbook, it isn't the answer to everything, but it is, it's a help, it's a guide, and perhaps it means that people here won't have to start completely from scratch. They'll have something to build on from experience that was learned in Alaska.
The scope of this problem is so vast and daunting. Now that your work has started, how difficult a job do you think being on the commission will be?
Well, it is a difficult assignment because it is a continuing tragedy. It, you know, with the Exxon Valdez, it was an event, it happened, and then it was all about the cleanup. It's also different because we have so many different communities, so many different states, so many different governmental entities that have to be engaged. So from the standpoint of the commission, we are attempting to zero in on the areas in which we can be most useful, paying attention to the fact that there are other investigations going on. I do feel that the most important legacy of our commission, however, will be less about the investigation and more about the recommendations that we make about changes in laws, changes in regulations, changes in operations, how process decision-making happens with regard to these higher-risk exploratory drilling operations so that we can reduce risk and still be able to have the benefits associated with a vibrant economy. Not an easy thing, and particularly not an easy thing to do in 6 months. But all I can say is I'll do my best.
UAA Chancellor Fran Ulmer is on the Presidential Commission on the BP oil spill. She says the next hearing is planned for the end of August. An Eagle River man remains missing along the Taylor Highway. Alaska State Troopers are looking for 56-year-old Charles Collins. He's believed to be the driver of the vehicle that careened 200 feet down an embankment earlier this week when heavy rains hit the 40-mile region. Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Beth Epson says the citizen reported seeing a truck in a creek near mile 114 north of Chicken Tuesday. Alaska Air National Guard pararescuers checked on the submerged vehicle and found no sign of any occupants. Ipsen says troopers continue to search for Collins using a helicopter and a hovercraft, but accessing this crash site is difficult.
The problem is this O'Brien Creek, where the truck is, it's submerged, it's been submerged, and it's a very swift, fast-moving creek. So that's why we haven't been able to really get out there.
Ipsen says additional rain and more high water are compromising the investigation. She says there's no road damage in the area of the accident, but the highway is slick due to rain.
It's one of those things where it looks like the individual drove off the side of the road.
Ipsen says Collins is the only person unaccounted for since last weekend's rains on the Taylor Highway. A 100-mile section of the road from Chicken to Eagle remains closed due to slides and washouts. But Department of Transportation Northern Region Maintenance Manager Jim Fehrenbacher says crews are making progress, getting more than 20 stranded motorists out.
We have taken care of several large washout areas on the south end, of the Taylor Highway, which would be north of Chicken. We were able last night to reach some motorists that were at the South Fork River campground, and we have those people out. So the last group that's there now is at Walker Fork, and we're fairly optimistic that we'll be able to get them out, hopefully yet today.
Fehrenbacher says after the emergency road work is complete, a damage assessment will be conducted, but he expects it will take 2 to 3 weeks to make the Taylor Highway safe enough to reopen it to the general public. He says area gold miners and other local residents will be allowed to travel the road during the repair phase. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new technology that should help speed up border crossings between Alaska and Canada.
Right now, people are pulling up and are happy to see how quickly they can be processed and move on down the road.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
The Alaska Supreme Court has continued the hold on the Alaska Railroad's plan to spray weed killer along its right-of-way. The court says it wants to hear more from both sides about the plan to spray herbicide along 30 miles of track. The railroad says it has tried other methods to keep weeds down, but needs herbicides. Environmental groups are fighting the state-issued permit. They say regulators failed to consider the herbicide's harmful effects on drinking water and salmon streams. The permit would have allowed spraying to begin last week, but the groups were granted a temporary stay until Friday. The Alaska Supreme Court has extended that stay. Both sides have until next Tuesday to file responses with the court. Governor Sean Parnell's recent decision to tap Susan Bell as Commerce, Community, and Economic Development Commissioner came with relatively little fanfare. She replaced Emil Noddy, a Palin appointee and longtime public servant who once served as Community and Regional Affairs Commissioner under Democratic Governor Bill Sheffield. Noddy resigned July 9th with no notice. Bell had been working as a special assistant to the governor, where she helped craft a bill reducing the state's cruise ship passenger head tax. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
The man Susan Bell replaced as Commerce, Community, and Economic Development Commissioner, Emil Noddy, says her biggest challenge will be dealing with the Community and Regional Affairs Division, with its focus on rural Alaska issues. Noddy should know. He was the commissioner back when Community and Regional Affairs was its own department. He was also the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and advocated for passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
The one odd part of the department is the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, because the rest of it is all businesses and business licensing, banking, securities, insurance.
Noddy says he never worked directly with Bell on projects at CCED, where she dealt with Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer. He was diplomatic when asked if he was forced to step down to make way for Bell.
Actually, I was Palin's pick, so, you know, the governor can pick his own cabinet, but I was been thinking about it for a while.
Were you asked to step down?
Yeah, I don't think I want to comment.
Bell was born in Nome and raised in Fairbanks. She's a shareholder in both the Bering Straits Native Corporation and Sitnasuk Native Corporation. Prior to joining the governor's office last October, she spent years working in the tourism industry. It started as a college job, but she soon dropped out of school to make it a career. In the 90s, she worked for the Convention and Visitors Bureaus in Haines, Ketchikan, and Juneau. From 1998 to 2001, she was vice president of tourism for Goldbelt, Juneau's urban native corporation. After leaving Goldbelt, Bell joined research and consulting firm McDowell Group.
So I feel really fortunate that Alaska has provided me a lot of opportunities, and I think I've been willing to move, change, and grow as opportunities presented themselves.
While at the McDowell Group, Bell finished her bachelor's degree in general studies at the University of Alaska Southeast. Though she continued to work on tourism issues, McDowell Group principal Jim Calvin says she was engaged in a broad variety of projects.
One particular area of focus was our work for the visitor industry, including survey research, market assessments, feasibility studies, and the like, but also engaged in other public facility development kinds of projects.
As a special assistant to the governor, Bell was heavily involved in writing a bill that reduced the state's voter-approved cruise ship head tax from $46 to $34.50, with another reduction to $19.50 for passengers stopping in Juneau and Ketchikan. Almost all ships stop at both ports, meaning cruise ship communities will receive millions of dollars less when the new tax takes effect next year. Governor Parnell introduced the bill in response to an industry lawsuit challenging certain aspects of the fee, as well as an expected reduction in passengers. The suit was dropped once the bill was signed into law. Critics of the change say the world economy, not the tax, is responsible for the decline in visitors, but Bell says the state has a responsibility to do what it can to help the industry, regardless of the reasons.
What I say is, it's very likely that the losses were both, but we need to look as a state as to what can we do to help restore the health of that industry.
Bell admits her work on the cruise ship bill likely contributed to her being offered the commissioner's job, but CCED has a lot more going on than just tourism. It includes financial regulatory divisions, state-owned corporations and agencies like the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, as well as rural issues. Bell says there will definitely be a learning curve.
There's a lot of detail. Well, I've been working with the department. There's a lot of detail that I'm going to have to come up to speed on. But I think one of the gifts that I hope to be able to bring is being able to think at across the department and in and outside of the department and think about how we can resolve things that people may not be able to do, you know, on their own.
Bell will be based in Juneau. If Parnell is reelected this fall, she would have to be reappointed and confirmed by the legislature next year. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation reports elevated levels of a bacteria at a beach in the city of Kenai. The bacteria is enterococci, which can be transmitted through fecal matter. DEC Water Division Program Manager Nancy Sonnefrank says that a recent test was done through a national effort of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's Clean Water Act. The testing was done at Kenai's North Beach from July 8th to the 11th. That was around the time the personal use dipnet fishery began, July 10th.
We have found some moderate levels of bacteria. They are over the standard, at least averages. They're not over the higher single sample maximum, but average is a little higher than we'd like to see it.
A person infected with the bacteria would have symptoms such as stomach aches, diarrhea, or ear, eye, and skin infections. Sonnefrank says her department is reminding the public of precautions that she says should always be followed. Wash skin after spending time in the water, rinse fish with clean water, and cook fish to 145 degrees.
We're recommending that people avoid swimming in the water because the highest risk is when you do full immersion and you might incidentally swallow some water.
If you take part in the dipnet fishery at the mouth of the Kenai River, you've likely seen the large crowds that gather there on peak days. By some estimates, around 10,000 people fit into an area that's about 1 square mile. But Sonnefrank says the exact cause of the elevated level of bacteria is not known. The high concentration of people is one possible reason for the high levels.
a lot of people on the beach and a lot of fish in the water and a lot of wildlife and dogs and all kinds of, you know, do make it so that there's more going on, and that might be part of the cause of the increased bacteria.
A few years ago, the DEC conducted a survey to find out what beaches were used the most that might be good candidates for testing. Earlier this year, the DEC tested an area in Anchor Point, and Sonnefrank says that beach was found to be clean. The DEC has also funneled grant funds to municipalities and nonprofit groups to do their own testing. Beaches near Dillingham, Naknek, Juneau, and Homer have been tested through those grants and didn't turn up anything concerning. Further studies will be conducted at the Kenai North Beach to learn more about the causes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. Operating a forklift is serious business, and operators are required to be properly trained and certified. The emotional and financial damage can be severe when a family member never comes home from work or comes home with a debilitating injury due to a forklift accident. Training information is available at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Former University of Alaska Fairbanks Vice Chancellor of Research Buck Sharpton is leading a team pursuing a mission to Mars. Sharpton, who left his UAF post at the end of last month but will continue to teach at the university, is currently focused on shepherding a proposal to NASA. Sharpton says the multinational academic and industry group wants to send an unmanned spacecraft to Venus to scan the planet.
The mission is basically to map the planet Venus at extremely high resolution. We will have a better data set for Venus than we have for the Earth when we get done.
Sharpton says the mission will employ a time-tested radar that will spin around Venus for two Earth years. Sharpton, who's worked on planetary missions in the past, says Venus is of interest because of its similar position to Earth in the solar system, and it's a very different environment. He says Venus may hold answers to fundamental questions scientists are grappling with on Earth.
Venus is a runaway greenhouse. And so does Venus represent what the Earth has in store? It may very well have been that early in the history of Venus that there was standing water, that there were oceans. There may have even been primitive life forms on Venus at one time, early in the history of the solar system. But for some reason, that all was terminated, and this immense atmosphere, principally carbon dioxide, was released from the planet. And all of that could be released from our planet.
Sharpton says just getting the Venus mission proposal together is a multi-million dollar endeavor, and his summer is packed with completing its submission to NASA. He says the next challenge will be getting through the evaluation phase. The group being led by Sharpton is one of several competing for NASA funding. The proposed Venus mission would launch in 2016. International border crossings are an unavoidable part of Alaskan life. But with tighter security, lines are getting longer and the process more cumbersome for international travelers. This month, one small Alaskan town is the first in the state to install new technology designed to speed up border crossings. Tara Bicknell with member station KHNS reports from Skagway.
The lines at Alaska-Canada border crossings have been growing longer and longer since 2008. That's when a new rule required passports for all international travelers crossing by road between the U.S. and Canada.
You know, before January of 2008...
Boyd Worley, Port Director for Customs and Border Protection in Skagway.
Canadian and U.S. citizens could cross the border into Canada or the U.S. simply by making an oral declaration. They didn't even have to present any documentation. And then it was up to the inspector to determine whether or not they could come into the U.S., and those days are, of course, are long gone.
Between May and September, Skagway sees about 2,000 people crossing the border each day. That can mean wait times of up to 45 minutes on the busiest tourism days.
I think the month of June We had 68,000 travelers here.
The station's hoping new technology might shorten those lines. This month, Skagway installed cameras that'll send vehicle and some passport information ahead to border officers before drivers even get there.
We recently had installed a piece of equipment called a license plate reader system that will actually read a license plate on a vehicle well in advance of it getting to the primary booth where we do the actual talking.
The upgrades have an effect on document processing, too. For the 2.8 million travelers who use new passport cards or those with passports that contain readable chips.
We have devices where you can hold that card up out of your window and it will bring the information to our primary screen in advance of you arriving at the booth, too.
Many of those Skagway to Yukon travelers are cruise ship passengers passing through the border on tour buses. But still, that's a heavy burden for a staff of 12, says Worley.
With that many people, we just have to be ready, and now we have the right equipment. It should speed things up considerably.
Officials say the equipment should save 6 to 8 seconds per inspection, which could translate to nearly 4 hours of saved time over a typical summer day.
Now, what's going to happen in the winter when all the rear plates are covered with snow? I guess we'll have to get a broom or something and go out and sweep them off to be able to read them.
Worley says it's too soon to tell exactly how much time is saved with the upgrades or what people think about the added cameras. Some travelers may feel the new technology is too intrusive, but so far, Worley says people seem to be happy with the faster processing.
Some people feel that there's an invasion of their privacy, but not that much information is contained on these cards. They say no personal privacy information is on those cards. It's mainly name and date of birth. It's going to take a while, I guess, for them to decide whether or not they consider it an invasion of their privacy. But right now, people are pulling up and are happy to see how quickly they can be processed and move on down the road.
The new technology does not collect any more information than the borders did before, but gives expanded access to more law enforcement databases.
That could provide us any of a number of answers to questions we might have, or in many cases, warn you of someone who could be armed and dangerous, or a lookout from another state, or an escaped murderer, or anything that, you know, could happen at a border crossing.
Alcan Crossing by Beaver Creek will be the second Alaska location to use license plate readers. They already have the equipment and will begin using it in August. In Skagway, I'm Tara Bicknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ben Stanton in Kenai, and Tara Bicknell in Skagway. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. 90% of those who drown in boating accidents in Alaska are men. To get men to wear their life jackets, have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Go to pledgetolive.org to get a card or find one at your local car Safeway. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety Program. Alaska's Institute of Technology Maritime Department is offering a Coast Guard approved Marine Oiler class beginning September 13th in Seward. The course will familiarize students with propulsion, power generation, and auxiliary systems on motor and steam ships. Required prerequisite training criteria is on the web at avtec.edu. Information at 800-478-5389. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.